Welcome to the eRetina podcasts on AMD fluid resolution. This is the last episode in this program. In this section, Drs. Frank Holtz, Giovanni Sterenghi, Martin Zinkernagel, Jordi Monez, and Peter Kaiser will discuss therapy options and real-world outcomes in wet AMD treatment. We'd like to thank Novartis and Zeiss for providing independent medical education support.
I may ask Jordi. There is a new kit on the block, prodecizumab, for the treatment of neovascular AMD, now approved since October in the US and in Europe since March of this year. And here's a question, would you consider going with treatment intervals beyond 12 weeks using prodecizumab?
Oh, absolutely. And even using ranibizumab or Eylea, it depends on the dynamics of the lesions. When we stabilize lesions and we make them not exudative, let's imagine a type 1 lesion, then we need to maintain those non-exudative. And many times, even with the current drugs, you achieve that by injecting every 4 months, but not stopping treating. We cannot stop treating. We need to treat them, even if it's every 4 months. With brolucizumab, it will be more feasible because it's very, anatomically, is very powerful. So it's, yes, the extension will be easier with Brolu and probably with faricimab if it's coming and other drugs that are coming. So extending will be easier. But again, if doctors don't use drugs properly, that will serve nothing. So the drugs may be very good, but they need to be used properly. Mm-hmm.
So if you, with these longer intervals, durability is a key issue, get rid of fluid for a long time. What, Giovanni, in your hands, do you feel what proportion of patients still would relapse, say, even after a year, maybe 2 years? Do we need to be concerned that there is a rebound at some stage?
Well, I think, it's a chronic disease and a chronic treatment. Probably you reduce the number of injections, but, if you look at probably all of us as a historical patient with a very big number of injection, we had recently a patient that came with a champagne bottle because I said, why you are bringing champagne? It's my 100th injection today. So it's
did you can get imagine to drink, or was it the patient?
No, for the patient. But you can imagine, it's something like that. You always treat in some way the patient, and it's a chronic disease again, so you need to continue to follow. Probably you reduce the injection during the years, but you have to still following them.
I know, Martin, you and your group looked at rebounds at unanticipated intervals during a longer course of anti-VEGF treated patients. What is your view?
So we basically have predefined exit criteria when we stop the treatment, and this probably arbitrary, but we defined it as 3 times 4 months. And with this regimen, we had quite good results. About between 15 and 20% of patients were able to exit the treatment. Out of these patients, 12% had a recurrence over the course of about 6 months. So I think these are fair numbers, and you cannot avoid a recurrence, but I think you really have to balance it against the treatment burden of your patients. Mm-hmm.
Peter, your view on that?
No, I agree. So treat and extend, there's a very finite and small number of patients, as Martin suggested, that you can try to switch them to as needed treatment. But be careful and watch those patients carefully after you switch them to as needed. And I actually use a very similar sort of algorithm as he uses, that they need to have at least 3 at the longest interval. So at least 12 weeks in my situation, where they're completely dry with no evidence of any changes before I even consider it. Mm-hmm. But it's rare. I got to admit, it's very rare.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. In terms of the real-world outcomes aspect, there's a question from the chat. We recently had the chance to read about the PRU study from Doheny on the real-world use of prodecizumab And perhaps, Peter, you wish to comment against the background of the SRC reported findings, how you view these reports on the real-world experiences.
So we were part of the BRUCE study, and it was basically four practices. And these are patients who had received, obviously, other anti-VEGF agents and then were given brolucizumab. And as you'd expect, the visual acuity results in this, it was a retrospective study, were the same. They didn't gain any vision. But what was interesting was there was a significant improvement in the OCT characteristics, so a significant reduction in subretinal, intraretinal fluid, and even just central subfield thickness, which goes along with what we saw in Hawk and Harrier, where there was also a significant difference in terms of the OCT results, and obviously no difference in visual acuity results. In terms of SRC, I certainly can comment on it, but I'd love to also hear Jordi's take on the SRC results, because he was very instrumental in the SRC.
Mm-hmm. Jordi.
Well, yes, that's this changes completely our whatever expectations, because a few months ago we were saying there it will be no reason why we will not switch all our patients to brolucizumab, because it's a more powerful drug, it's anatomically more powerful, so it lasts longer. So it appeared to be the ideal drug. Unfortunately, with these kind of events of 0.5% of important or very significant visual loss due to arterial occlusion, then that counts a lot. And then we need to put in the scale this kind of new risk, which is superior to an endophthalmitis, and this putting in the other side, the number of injections, the patients that do not respond. So we will not treat every patient with brolucizumab. Probably will we treat those patients that are resistant or not very responsive. Unfortunately, we'll need to make this kind of judgment every time.
Mm-hmm. So it's a trade-off risk-benefit decision. Right. Now we have a final question here from the chat, and this goes straight again into fluid management. Bilateral active disease with different set biological clocks in terms of fluid coming up, going back and forth. Giovanni, how you then place the retreatment intervals if the right eye doesn't care what the left eye does?
Well, we are considering each eye as a single eye and a single patient. So we can actually treat in any way both. Unfortunately, at least here in Italy, we are not able to treat in the same day both eyes. But we have to leave at least by rules 15 days apart from one to the other.
15,
yes. And pardon?
The reason being for this separation?
Because the Italian agency of drugs considered that the pharma company didn't bring the data for the safe procedure for both eyes in the same day. And because of that, we have to wait 15 days. And but in any way, we are considering, each eye in a single eye. So, of course, if there is fluid, we treat that eye. And if there are both eyes with the fluid in the same day, we will treat after 15 days the fellow eye. So that is what we are doing right now.
What's the solution for this in Switzerland, Martin?
Yeah, so it's the same in Switzerland. The problem is that also in Switzerland, the eyes are not synced, although we have a very synced watch industry and everything, but the Swiss eyes are not synced. So often, you extend in one eye and the other eye gets active and you start with 4 weekly intervals. And I mean, if they're quite close together, you can ask the patient and maybe, she or he prefers to have both eyes injected. But if they're very far apart in terms of weeks, then we treat them separately. Mm-hmm. But we do same day injections. So we do the injection bilaterally.
So do we. I think it helps patients not having an extra visit. It's a pragmatic.
Yes.
Doing so. Well, thank you very much, Peter, Giovanni, Jordi, and Martin, for joining this panel discussion. It's been a great pleasure, great insight.
We hope that this eRetina podcast advanced your understanding of therapy options and real-world outcomes for wet AMD patients. This concludes the podcast on AMD fluid resolution. Thank you for listening.